their communities. We thank the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission for their work on this inquiry and for the opportunity to speak today. We acknowledge that the inquiry currently underway is considering discrimination against all Australians in same-sex relationships. However, as Women's Health Victoria's area of expertise is in women's experiences, it'll be from this perspective that I give evidence today.
Sure.
So some of it will be relevant to both women and men, but much of it will be women-focused.
Yeah, that's understood.
So the development of a full understanding of how women in same-sex relationships are discriminated against when attempting to access financial and work-related entitlements and benefits is of specific concern to us, given the strong connection between health and well-being and experiences of discrimination. Evidence shows that increased rates of substance abuse, poor mental health, low self-esteem and recorded suicide attempts among same-sex attracted women, lesbians in particular, are the consequence of heterosexism, a process of promoting heterosexuality as normative. So legislation that doesn't adequately recognise people in same-sex relationships reinforces this, and in doing so contributes to the health status of women in same-sex relationships. Victorian women in same-sex relationships are influenced most acutely by the financial and work-related entitlements and benefits set out in Victorian and federal legislation. In Victoria, as I'm sure that you've heard over the last period of time through the submissions and the evidence that you've heard, we have the Statute Law Amendment Relationships Act and the Statute Law Further Amendment Relationships Act in 2001. Through the inclusion of domestic partners, it recognised same-sex couples in a number of areas, including inheritance rights, stamp duty exemption, and access to accident and workers' compensation in the incidents where one member of a couple dies. At the federal level in 2002, the term interdependency relationship was coined to enable those in same-sex de facto relationships to fall under the definition of a dependent person in some pieces of federal legislation. So these acts offer some improved financial security to women in same-sex relationships, though they don't seek to remove discrimination in all areas of law, and subsequently the discrimination continues. We believe that the recognition of domestic partnerships and interdependent relationships doesn't go far enough for women in same-sex relationships who wish to have those relationships consistently attributed with the same economic privileges as opposite-sex marriages. For example, federally legislated income tax does not recognise women in same-sex relationships. The dependent spouse rebate is not applied to a financially dependent same-sex partner, and other tax concessions and rebates available to same-sex couples, including medical expenses, to opposite-sex couples, including medical expenses, are unavailable to same-sex couples. And the Victorian Government Health Porthole Better Health Channel indicates that 40% of lesbians, as well as gay men, report workplace discrimination, which may extend to limited promotions and pay rise prospects. The situations for lesbians is particularly concerning, given their simultaneous exposure to heterosexism and sexism. If discrimination against women in same-sex relationships is to be eradicated, then the sexist underpinnings of financial and work-related entitlements also needs to be addressed. And it's that point that is the basis of our submission. I'll try not to say too much about interdependency, as I know that you've heard a lot about it over the course of this inquiry. What I will say is that we believe there are many limitations associated with using the term interdependency. One characteristic is shared finances. For women, financial interdependency is limiting, and socially sanctioned economic dependence can have grave consequences. Financial independence is something that should be available to all women to ensure they don't end up in relationships where access to material needs can be manipulated by economically advantaged partners. And I'm sure that this isn't limited to women. The social reality, though, has an adverse impact on women's health, and the legislation that perpetuates women's economic dependence or independence in any form must be reassessed. This would ensure that women in both opposite and same-sex relationships are able to have financial control over their lives. An interdependency, as outlined in the current legislation, identifies economic interdependence as a criterion for securing some entitlements and benefits. Thus, financial independence is discouraged. Ironically, the law, which does not recognise same-sex relationships, may be financially advantageous to recipients in same-sex relationships who have working partners. These women do not lose benefits and thus are not forced into dependence. This is one of the very few examples where same-sex relationships may benefit financially from discrimination. If improvements are to be made to the way in which financial and work relationships are allocated, then issues concerning gender must be considered alongside sexuality. Abolishing promotion of financial dependence is central to that. While interdependency can be critiqued on a number of levels, legislation which acknowledges those same-sex relationships at least is a vast improvement on legislation that doesn't. The introduction of interdependency has brought a selection of financial gains that were previously unobtainable. In terms of its relevance, only over 80% of Victorians who participated in the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby Same-Sex Relationship Survey were interdependent on at least one measure. So over 80% of them were able to recognise that. And it showed that people in same-sex couples are able to access some of the economic privileges previously reserved for people in heterosexual couples. However, the study also showed that none of the measures for interdependency were able to be secured for almost 20% of the sample. And this was significant, this 20%, given that the average length of current relationships was almost 5 years, with 13% of them having been together for at least 10 years. So even in those very long-term ongoing stable relationships, at least 20% of the sample weren't able to access any financial advantage.
Do you know, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I won't remember the question, but if I don't. Do you know if there was any correlation between the length of relationships and the group that that missed out, in the 20% that missed out?
No, I don't. Not about length versus that. I can check that and provide the answers to you.
Okay, it's just interesting.
Yes.
Given the lengths of relationships that you talk about. Okay, yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Sorry, I'm just making a note of that. Thank you. Women's Health Victoria recognises that for many same-sex couples, proving interdependency is possible, but there are some significant limitations. And the fact that it needs to be proved is something that heterosexual couples don't encounter. Most noteworthy of these is that it's not recognised consistently across all federal legislation or by all federal entities, schemes and rebates, including Medicare, the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, childcare rebates, housekeeper rebates, and some pension and compensation entitlements. The inconsistency is another form of discrimination. Interdependency may also be critiqued based on other measures used to assess same-sex relationships. The linking of interdependency to live-in relationships is narrow, given that women in same-sex relationships may choose to live separately or may not live with their partner due to fear, social or family pressure. These women should not be denied the entitlements made available to opposite-sex couples, particularly when live-in relationships are a form of relationship that they would like to emulate but feel that they can't do so safely. Superannuation is the other area that I'd like to talk about. Legislation pertaining to superannuation of public sector employees and military personnel hasn't been amended, although all other employees in same-sex relationships are now granted similar rights thanks to the amendment to the superannuation legislation in 2004. This recognition might have improved the financial positioning of women in same-sex relationships who have since lost their partners, but it has not reduced the gender divide that exists between women and men. Women require greater savings in retirement because they have increased life expectancy, even though their average earnings are less than men. So superannuation legislation does not adequately address for this shortfall, making women-only households and women in same-sex relationships particularly susceptible to dependence on the aged pension in retirement. The system for recording superannuation benefactors is also problematic, given the prevalence of heterosexism. In some workplaces, listing a same-sex partner as a benefactor is not feasible. Not everyone works for such enlightened employees as the previous personal story that we heard. A same-sex relationship may be discovered by employers as superannuation forms commonly request that the employee indicate the address of their nominated benefactor. While it's possible for employees to contact their superannuation fund directly to change their benefactors, this is a time-consuming process. As gay men and lesbians have been identified in health research as populations which may be reluctant to have their sexuality recorded in their medical histories for fear of discrimination by health practitioners, it's highly likely that they may similarly hesitate to list same-sex partnership as partner as their benefactor when beginning a job. For teachers in Catholic schools, for example, this can be grounds for dismissal. In addition, the new industrial relations form reforms make listing same-sex partner even more risky for those in same-sex relationships, as employers with less than 100 members of staff no longer have to provide detailed justification for dismissing workers. The growth of casual employment also means that the number of hours allocated to employees in same-sex relationships may be reduced by homophobic employers. This is not readily able to be measured or proven, and these outcomes bear directly on the superannuation able to be accumulated by women in same-sex relationships. So in conclusion, Women's Health Victoria recognises that a person's health is partly determined by their work and their socioeconomic status, and that by having financial independence has a positive influence on health. Financial and work-related entitlements and benefits that discriminate against women in same-sex relationships hinder their ability to achieve equality. We stress that all people are entitled to fundamental human rights, including the right to non-discrimination. We recognise that many of Australia's laws continue to discriminate against women in same-sex relationships and identify such laws as having an impact upon these women's health. We encourage law reform that is informed by people in same-sex relationship and also mindful of the diverse needs and relationship forms women in same-sex relationships have. Thanks.
Carolyn, thank you. I do have, as you predicted, a few questions that I'd like to ask you. You talk a fair bit about the concept of heterosexism in your paper.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain the history of this term and how it's used in the current literature and lobbying for equal rights?
I don't think I can actually explain the history behind that. I would need to do some work to explain the history behind it.
Mm.
There is certainly increasing use of terms like that in the academic literature, and I don't think that it has made it into the advocacy type work that is going on yet. Most of the places that I read about it is academic papers that talk about how heterosexuality is viewed in society and how we construct our notions of what's normal and what is not. In terms of the history of it, I would need to go back and have a look at that.
History's not so relevant as I mean, it's interesting, but it's not so relevant for us, but it's just understanding the context or the way that it's used, and I think you've...
It's begun at an academic... academic musings, I think, and then it's developed into theories and and conversations, and I think that it will start to make its way more into informed advocacy as time goes on.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. You provide an overview of the impact of discrimination experienced by women, particularly lesbian women, on their health.
Yes.
Could you give us an example of how discrimination impacts on a lesbian woman's health? You know, a specific example of a situation where that's the case. I mean, I understand what you described, but just a specific
Certainly.
Example would be useful.
In terms of the development of sexual and reproductive health services and perhaps a sexual and reproductive health framework for a state or a federal government. I have been talking recently to colleagues who work in health services and health and academic research about the development of this type of framework. And one of the things that comes up is that people talk about contraception all the time when they talk about sexual and reproductive health advocacy, without a notion that for women in same-sex relationships or women who have sex with women, their sexual and reproductive health needs are very different. The types of questions, there has been some research done on how doctors ask questions about sexuality and ascertain the need to undertake pap tests about what types of whether a woman may or may not need contraception, what other forms of safe sex that she may engage in, and how we need to shift doctors' understandings and therefore conversations that they have with their patients to ensure women who are having sex with women are able to obtain the best possible services in an environment in which they feel comfortable and able to disclose those types of things.
That's helpful, thank you. Your submission mentions the changes to Victorian laws through the Statute Law Amendment Relationships Act. Both of those pieces of legislation. Again, can you give an example of the types of changes that were made to Victorian legislation as a result of these as a result of these acts?
Commissioner, I'd have to tell you I'm not an expert in law, and I don't think that that's an area that I would feel comfortable answering a question off the top of my head on. I'd rather leave that to the experts.
Let me ask you a sort of a follow-on question.
Sure.
Can you, and you can see that we're interested in examples here because they're always useful to quote in our report. Are you able to provide an example of how those changes have impacted on the lives of lesbian women in Victoria? That might clearly point up the impacts of those changes, particularly in your area of health. You might want to take that on notice.
I can't think of one off the top of my head. Which is interesting, because when I was sitting listening to the previous one, I was thinking how important and how pleased I was that you were taking personal stories and that type of way of giving evidence and expertise was really important. And now that you ask me, I can't think of one.
Well, wasn't my intention
to get
you out.
That's a little embarrassing.
It wasn't my intention at all. But
I will take it on
notice.
But
it does. In our view, I mean, you would know as well as we do that inquiries like this don't change government's minds unless you get community support. And the way you get community support is to actually make it real for people by having examples, and so we've been trying to do that all the time. So yes, if you were able to, that would be helpful. I'm just looking at some of the questions that I was going to ask you, but you've covered some of these things. Do you think do you think there are better definitions of, well, you've talked about interdependency, but do you think that there are better definitions of that could be used rather than terms like domestic partnerships and interdependency relationships?
I think that partnership or civil union isn't are very good ways forward. I do have some concerns with the term spouse being applied in the way that it currently is, and I certainly concur with the previous evidence that was given about the limitations of that. I think that civil union or domestic partnership is the way to go forward. I'm very concerned about, I guess, the dependence required in interdependence, and also the need to prove that in the way that heterosexual relationships don't need to because they're considered de facto.
Sure. Yep. No, I understand that. You've covered the issues in brief of how federal law is discriminating against same-sex couples, and you've talked about income taxation and medical rebates. Again, I'm going to ask you for examples. Do you have examples of how financially these laws might impact on same-sex couples?
I think that the PBS rebate, the $1,000 rebate that people can claim if over a period of 12 months you accumulate $1,000 worth of medical expenses in terms of medication, medical expenses through the PBS, then you can claim a rebate back from the government following that. In heterosexual couples, their costs can be joined together so that it's $1,000 for the couple. However, in people in same-sex relationships, they're still considered separate entities, and therefore it's $1,000 each. So they need to reach a $2,000 threshold before receiving the rebate, whereas heterosexual couples can do it at the $1,000 threshold.
Yep. Okay. That's great. I'm sorry to continue on the theme of examples, but seem to be running through my questions. You talked about the 20% of people that fail to be able to meet the criteria.
Yes.
20% of relationships that fail to be able to meet the criteria for interdependency.
Yes.
Have you got any examples of couples who where you can describe their relationship and show how they fail to meet that? Those criteria?
I would need to go back to that original piece of research.
Okay.
It wasn't research that Women's Health Victoria undertook.
Mm.
And I think that goes back to your very first question too, about the 20%, about the length of time
that they've
been in a relationship.
It does. I mean, if we are looking at alternatives to recommend for addressing the discrimination, clearly interdependency is one of those alternatives.
Yes. Yep.
And I'm not making any comment at this point as to, you know, whether it's the best alternative, but it would be very helpful to be able to set out examples of where that would actually exclude people. And I know those statistics you've given us are very useful, but if there were descriptions of those sorts of couples, then that would be that would be helpful as well.
If it's okay with you, I might follow up with Dr. Ruth McNair. She was one of the principal investigators in that particular research, and she's a Victorian general practitioner and academic, and she's also on the Gay Lesbian Health Mac here for the Department of Human Services.
Okay.
And she has a great degree of knowledge, and she was a principal investigator on that.
Sure.
So I will follow up with Ruth, and I'll provide you with some examples from their research outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know you've said that you're not a lawyer, but your submission talks about superannuation disadvantage, if you like, particularly in relation to private superannuation schemes. Are you able to comment on what changes would need to be made to superannuation legislation to address the different financial needs of lesbian women?
No.
Okay.
No, I think it's best that I don't.
Yeah, okay, well, that's fine. I mean, understand that.
I think that for us, we see, at Women's Health Victoria, we see a lot of difficulties that women experience in terms of gender bias, and we undertake a lot of gender analysis, and financial security and how superannuation impacts on that is a significant issue for us.
Mm.
And when you're talking about women in same-sex relationships or women-only households, then you can see the multiple impacts of that.
Yeah.
In terms of what recommendations I would make to changes in the legislation, I don't think I can answer that.
Okay. You talked about people, about women not listing their partners as beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a concerning issue that you've raised. Without obviously identifying people, are you able to give us examples of people where that's occurred, and the you know, the reasons for that occurring, you know, what it is that they're concerned about, in other words, the relevant concerns in their workplaces.
I think that I have been lucky to have always been employed by particularly enlightened employees. Mm. And I think amongst my personal friendships, I know of people who I have talked to about this and about their concerns. Mm. And particularly for younger women, it's a form of coming out that they might not be ready for.
Mm.
And it's certainly a form of coming out that is put upon you and not a decision made. That if this is how this is how you want your entitlements and payouts to be recognised in terms of a partner, then you really need to specify that quite clearly. And a lot of people haven't broach that within their workplace, a lot of young women in particular, who may still be coming to terms with how they talk about their sexuality with other people.
Because we can't fix that with legislative change, can we? I mean, even if the legislation changes so that there is no disadvantage in terms of superannuation schemes, that problem is going to remain while there are the views or the perceived views, and it's both of those things, I guess. Of lesbian relationships in the community, isn't it?
You're right. I do feel though that legislation helps create it contributes to the climate.
I accept that. Yeah.
And while we can't change an increasingly conservative political environment, socially we can make a change. And for example, I think that it's gone out of my head now. Smoking ran through my mind, and I thought, no, that's not a good example. But violence. Being drunk in public, violent behaviour, behaviour in sporting venues, a lot of those things have changed over time with significant social education campaigns and social marketing, and I think that legislation helps set the tone for that. And you're right, it won't change situations immediately, and it won't change them in all individual instances, but I think that it helps contribute to a positive, progressive climate, and so one that we as a society desperately need.
Yeah. So your answer implies really that reinforces the comment that's been made a couple of times earlier this morning, that and again in Tasmania where we were just yesterday, that there are changes needed to legislation, but there's public education and attitude change that needs to occur to address the broader range of discriminatory practices in the community. Or
certainly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Certainly. Okay. Kirrily, thank you. That's all the questions that I had. That's been very helpful expansion on your organisation's submission. So I appreciate both the submission and you're making yourself available today to have the conversation that we have. It's been very useful for the inquiry.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to take some questions on notice too.
It's always available. Okay, thanks.